the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. This is John Barber. Welcome to John Barber's World, live from Las Vegas, Nevada. It is Monday the 15th, 2017, we are live in a town of one-armed bandits in a country run by a number of heavily armed, two-armed bandits. Wow! Time flies. Truth cries. Folks, I only hope half as much excitement is going on in your lives as is going on in mine right now. It's hard to believe that after a year, our film, The American Media and the Second Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, opens in 11 days at the Music Hall Theater in Beverly Hills. Pacifica Radio, which is KPFK in L.A., where Mae Brussel used to work, has made getting tickets to this movie and a DVD, a special edition DVD, one of the high points in their two-week-long fun drive. What an honor. With all these good things happening to me personally and in my film this year, I think the universe has realigned and assigned me a new guardian angel, because I heard the last one committed suicide a number of years ago after losing another great television show. I dreamt I talked with my then guardian angel, and I asked her, with all the horrible things that were happening to me, how come I ended up getting such a terrific wife and son? And she said, without missing a beat, I accidentally took my eyes off you. You know, at one time in my act, I did 5 minutes of Bad Luck, and it was a huge hit with the audience, because evidently a lot of folks can identify with that. And the closing line was, my luck's so bad, if I bought a cemetery plot, I'd probably drown at sea. Well, now, if I bought it, I would strike oil. 2 weeks from now, Monday, May 29th, there's a huge internet live event on JFK's 100th birthday. Sunday, the day before, which is the 28th, following the screening of our film, 10 of the major speakers in the country are going to be at this event. We'll participate in a Q&A with me. There is one, though, that I'm most anxious to meet again, and you're going to meet him right now. It's an about-time second visit. If you Google Wayne Madsen journalist, you will not only learn a lot about one of the country's widest-read and most respected investigative journalists, but with his must-read Madsen report, you'll see outstanding, astounding, amazing videos like the making of a president. Now, for the making of a great show, a great journalist, and a great writer, and a great friend, Wayne Madsen. Wayne, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Good to be with you, John.
Well, let me ask you a question, because I know you're having a tough time in Florida with all the dryness and the lack of rain. You may have a problem with your throat, and it might not be easy for you to speak, but if you could holler out loud now and talk about anything, what would you like to talk about?
Well, most people I've encountered, especially up in Washington, would think it was a blessing that I have trouble speaking. But there's a lot breaking right now up in the nation's capital. I covered politics up there for many years, and we've got this situation now with President Trump apparently telling the Russian ambassador and the Russian foreign minister, some highly classified code-worded information about what he received from another nation's intelligence service. And there's all this pulling of hair and gnashing of teeth. And I just have to, you know, stand back and laugh because, you know, Richard Nixon said, and he was correct about this, when the president does it, it's not illegal.
Yeah, that is, you know, that's astounding. That's true.
Yes.
Oh, my. Didn't he say that to David Frost?
That's right. That's right. And
oh, my God. You know,
and we're right back to it again with this brouhaha in Washington this evening.
You know, but truthfully, it must be worse now. Of course, it's worse for the country, but it must be funnier for you people who are into trying to investigate this and report on it and make sense of it, because it is so nonsensical. But Richard Nixon, as much as I did not like Richard Nixon, I did not admire Richard Nixon at all, at least he had a respect and, I must say, a love for the office of the presidency. And if you look at it, he made a major change in the world when he recognized Red China. And he was probably the only president, as conservative as he seemed, who could recognize that country. He is a man who also tried to write a book. He loved to play the piano, and he loved to read. Now we're dealing with a president who can do neither.
Well, you know, and one thing about Nixon, too, a lot of people forget is he had to run as a conservative in 1968, the Southern strategy to get the Southern states away from the Democrats. And that year away from George Wallace, who was running as an independent, who I believe won five states. And he would have won more had Nixon not pivoted to the right. But Nixon at heart, he was a Quaker, and he was really considered after he served Eisenhower as vice president for two terms, he was more linked in with the moderate to liberal wing of the Republican Party, because, you know, Goldwater lost heavily in 64. And some of the things Nixon did were absolutely not conservative. He brought us the OSHA for safety regulations. And,
that's right.
And the Environmental Protection Agency was his. Wage and price controls, which were considered rather socialist in nature, that was his doing as well. And not only the outreach to China, but also detente with the Soviet Union at the time. These were hallmark issues that you would expect somebody from, say, the Rockefeller wing of the Republican Party would advocate. But you're right about, you know, Donald Trump. You can't really put this guy in any category. I would say that what he's accused of telling the Russian ambassador and Foreign Minister Lavrov, it was apparently classified information from Israel, having to do with Israeli knowledge of the Islamic State putting explosives in laptops. Hence, we had this, you know, situation where you can't take a laptop in as a cabin with your cabin baggage on flights from Europe to the United States and Middle East and going back again, apparently, even return flights to Europe. These laptops are banned. But look, This isn't classified. Everybody knows that they can do this with laptops, and so I'm a little surprised there's all this angst. So we told the Russians. The Israelis probably have already told the Russians this. So you know.
I must tell you, there is no question that Mossad knows more about everything that's going on in the United States than does. Then does the CIA or the NSA. I mean, you're dealing with probably the most effective, when you're dealing with Mossad, you're dealing with the most effective intelligence organization. ever created. A couple of little sidebar things about Richard Nixon. When I was doing the show Real People, I did a story about a guy named Alan J. Weberman. Have you ever heard the name?
I have not.
Well, he has written a book about the assassination, but he gained fame in New York as a garbologist. He would take people's garbage like an archaeologist and look into it. Okay, so we were doing a story about him. Well, I found out where Richard Nixon's apartment was in New York City, and I was there the day they took out the garbage. So as part of the story, I grabbed Nixon's garbage and started running down the street. And the Secret Service hopped out of the building, immediately started hollering, "John, John, get back here." So I had to deliver the garbage back, and it was all on camera. And he said, "You know, Mr. Nixon loves your show, but he doesn't want you to know any more about him." And they took the garbage away. And when I was under contract to Westinghouse to replace Merv Griffin, my producer was going to be Roger Ailes. And Roger Ailes came out to see me performing here in Vegas. And I must tell you, he looked like a young Cary Grant. He looked like a young Tyrone Power. I mean, but since then, it looks like he's been living on Orson Welles' diet. But he, aside from admiring Richard Nixon, he totally admired Nixon's wife. And, you know, a lot of the wives of the presidents, and especially Jackie, helped make the president who was sitting in the Oval Office a much more appealing man. You do not get that with Mr. Trump. And speaking of Mr. Trump, do you notice how many newsmen in Washington, D.C. refer to him as Mr. Trump and not as Donald Trump?
That's right. Yeah. And you're talking about first ladies, of course. We've never had, I don't think in recent memory, a first lady like Melania, who's living in New York and really doesn't look very happy every time she has to do some official function in Washington.
But she's probably incapable of doing it. And how much is it costing us daily to keep her protected in New York?
Oh, quite a bit of money. I mean, when you look at all the various Trump properties now where he spends time, now Mar-a-Lago, apparently he's not going to be there during the summer months. He's going to go to his country club in Bedminster, New Jersey. But you've got the Trump Tower, where he hasn't spent an awful lot of time since he's been president. But they have to keep Secret Service protection there for his wife and his son.
Do you think it's much to do about nothing, this business with Comey?
Well, I think Comey, it's a very interesting issue with Comey. Comey got in trouble because he asked for more resources to investigate. And I don't think the issue is Trump and the election and the Russians helping him in the election. Russians that were hacking into the DNC, Democratic National Committee, or the Hillary Clinton campaign. I believe, and based on some things that have happened recently, every one of these major scandals, whether it's Watergate, Iran-Contra, or this one, the investigators always nab the perpetrators when they follow the money. An interesting story. There was an individual who worked for the Reagan National Security Council. He was seconded over from the CIA. And I had breakfast with him one time. And he said, you know, I was assigned the task during when the Iran-Contra scandal first broke in the Reagan White House. They said, you know, you're going to be the guy that's going to look at these money flows and you're going to follow the money and see where it leads. And he said it was with much chagrin that he once had to go into the president's office and all the aides were there. And he said, "I've followed the money." And yes, where did you follow it to? And he said, "Right back here."
Oh, my goodness.
And jaws dropped. And it was true, because that's how Oliver North and Admiral Poindexter, they were, and William Casey over at the CIA were all running this off-the-shelf operation involving weapons for hostages and money to the Contras in Nicaragua. It was all being run out of a boiler shop run by Oliver North in the basement of the White House, and that's what this individual found out.
I remember it very, very well. And you brought up the business of Watergate. In 1979, I hosted for about a month a morning show. It was an AM show in Chicago. And one of Nixon's speechwriters had written a book. It was a fairly thick book. And, of course, I make it a point. I pride myself in reading every book of every author who comes on. It's not to show that I have knowledge about it, because I never do that. I just like it helps me lead to what I want the authors to say. Well, he had two sentences in this 450-page book, and the two sentences were that the Watergate break-in had nothing to do with the election, because McGovern was absolutely no threat to Richard Nixon. It had more to do with Larry O'Brien and his files. It seems Larry O'Brien was the coordinator with the intelligence community and the CIA, who in Las Vegas put together or assembled those people who would put together a hit team to kill Castro. And they included John Roselli, they included Bob Mayhew here in Las Vegas, and that Larry O'Brien, after those failed attempts, ends up as president of the Democratic Party. Their offices are in the Watergate Hotel, and Nixon wanted Larry O'Brien's files, not on McGovern, but on Castro. Now, this was just two sentences in the book. That was the first question I asked him, Wayne, and he spent an hour talking about it and then said, John, I wish I had written the entire book about the Kennedy assassination and the oblique references to it by everyone in Nixon's administration. Even Haldeman, he would talk about the Cuba thing, or he'd talk about the Bay of Pigs thing. Do you think there's any substance to that?
Oh, I do. And you know, an author who I know, Len Kolodny, wrote a book called Silent Coup. He just reissued it a few years ago. He contends that the Watergate operation was really an attempt by the CIA to undermine and get rid of Richard Nixon. Nixon was asking a lot of questions about the Cuba thing, which many people thought was code for what happened in Dallas. And Len Kolodny, he interviewed everybody and got everyone he could possibly get on tape, including, which is kind of ironic, tapes. He taped everybody about Watergate. He interviewed Bob Woodward. Now, the interesting thing about Bob Woodward, everyone thinks he was a journalist all along, but he wasn't. He had been a naval intelligence officer.
That's right.
And was a liaison between the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Wheeler, and Henry Kissinger at the National Security Council. Early on in the Nixon administration, they take Woodward and they give him a job after he leaves the Navy over with a Montgomery County, Maryland newspaper, which was owned by the Post. And that was just a sheep dip him there long enough to build up a few creds, journalist creds, and then they drop him over into the Post. And of course, he gets assigned to work with Carl Bernstein, and the rest is history.
I'm so pleased that you bring up that sheep dipping about the media. Because one of there are a couple of things that pride me the most about this film that you'll see. And when you see it on a huge screen, you're going to be blown away. But the fact is that it's as topical today as it was then. I mean, to most people, the killing of John Kennedy 53 years ago is like ancient history. But the business of the fake news that Jim Garrison encountered when he tried to investigate the case is still with us. And it's the fake news that created the fake Cold War with the Soviet Union, the fake war in Vietnam, the fake wars in Iraq. And we see it every day. And they admit they lied when they tell us, well, there were no weapons of mass destruction. And then look, not only do they laud somebody like this Woodward at the Washington Post, which is affiliated with the Central Intelligence Agency anyway, taken over by Project Mockingbird, the CIA's plan to take over the media so they could control our foreign policy, which they do to this day. But look at Condoleezza Rice. I remember when she said something about, we don't want the smoking gun to be a nuclear bomb, when she was talking about Iraq. Now look where that lady is today. I mean, she's invited to join the Masters Golf Club, for crying out loud. She's teaching at Stanford University. She should be in prison, for crying out loud.
Right.
Nothing happens to these people. That's the thing that I love about the movie, and I can't wait for you to see it. But I think Kolodny, and you are right on, because I had a friend who was associated with Richard Nixon. We got along great, even though we had different political views. And he said Nixon was trying to create his own sort of secret police so that they could function outside of the CIA, and that the reason they got rid of him had nothing to do with the election. It had to do that he was creating his own secret team.
That's right. And his initiative to China and the initiative to the Soviet Union were done outside of the CIA State Department construct. Remember, Nixon very rarely even dealt with his own Secretary of State. They talk about this guy, Rex Tillerson. Now they're saying, well, he really isn't on the inside of the Trump team. But, you know, poor William Rogers, there's a name nobody remembers.
Exactly.
Secretary of State Rogers was always on the outside looking in because Henry Kissinger was really running the inner sanctum there at the White House with Richard Nixon. So, you know, the thing about Comey being fired, I think Trump had to get rid of him because Comey was starting to follow the money. In recent days, just the last 2 days, we find out that the FBI has had a huge influx of data from something called the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is a intelligence operation run by the Treasury Department, but keeps an eye on money flows. And of particular interest to them, and the FBI got this just about the time Comey was fired, bank transactions in and out of the Bank of Cyprus. Now, the Bank of Cyprus was owned by Wilbur Ross, who just so happens to be Mr. Trump's Commerce Secretary. And it's known to launder, that bank is known to launder a lot of money for the Russian mafia.
Can you possibly believe, if you think down back to the Wayne Madsen in the 1970s and 1980s, I don't know how old you are, but I'm sure you can.
63.
Well, Wayne, can you imagine looking back at Wayne Madsen then and thinking that in 20 years from now, I'm going to be saying some really nice things about Richard Nixon?
Yeah, no, I was not a big Nixon fan. And
it's impossible to comprehend. So look at how far down we have come in the environmental natural order of things to have a man like Donald Trump in the White House. But the choices that we had were just, it's like, do you want to fly on the Hindenburg or sail on the Titanic?
Exactly.
I mean, what kind of choices do we have? Unless that system has changed, we're monumentally doomed. And if you talk about follow the money, they probably could have solved the crimes of 9/11 if they had followed the leads from a number of good investigative reporters, people with the talents that you have, talking about the sales, or whatever they call it when they sell short on airlines and stuff.
Oh, yeah, the put options.
The right. Put options in with the airlines. If they had followed that, they would have solved the crime.
They could have even prevented it. This information, a lot of it was known before 9/11, but, didn't react, didn't respond. They sat on the information. But you're right about, I think back when Nixon was president, and I also remember people, teachers of mine in school would say, this is such a wonderful country, anyone can be elected president of the United States. But, you know, I'm thinking, is that really such a good idea that anyone can be elected president of the United States? Well, I think we see that now in as they used to say in NBC, in Living Technicolor.
Well, you know, didn't you start out in the military? Weren't you related somehow?
I worked in Navy intelligence for 10 years and left as a lieutenant in 1985, right in the midst of the Iran-Contra scandal.
Yeah, well, during Iran-Contra, we quote this in the book, in the movie, is George Bush said if they knew what when he was president, and it was at the height of the Iran-Contra scandal, he said if they knew what we were doing, meaning us, they would chase us down the street and hang us. You know, so a lot of stuff is going on that we're not aware of. But how do you go? Obviously, if you're in naval intelligence, you're gung-ho and you're singing the Star-Spangled Banner and you're saluting Uncle Sam every day. How do you go from that mindset to this brilliant, radical writing that you do now?
Well, I was a skeptic and a cynic even in the Navy. We had our mission, but you know, I realized I saw firsthand how money was being wasted, for example, on things that were supposed to be national security systems, but in effect, we had one system was actually developed by the Canadians, and we were using it. It was a plotting device, and it used pen refills to plot on paper. And I said, the only decent thing this thing does is I don't ever have to buy a refill for my Parker pen, because we have so many of these laying around for this machinery. I mean, the thing was absolutely useless.
Well, speaking of following the money, at the height of the Watergate scandal, when I guess it was Hunt who was shaking down Nixon for $1 million or something to be quiet, there was his wife was on a plane bound for Chicago, and that plane went down, and evidently the FBI on the ground immediately prevented a real thorough search of what was going on. And I had John Dean on about a month and a half ago, and he really scolded me for even bringing that up and suggesting there was any malfeasance. And I was quite shocked, because I thought John maybe had played an important role and helped bringing down a crooked president. But, you know, he was such an apologist for the system. But do you think that there was really some – there have been a lot of fishy plane crashes. Hale Box, who was the only dissenting member of the Warren Commission. Yeah. He's the guy that put Garrison on the trail of the assassins.
Right. Paul Wellstone in Minnesota.
Yes, Paul Wellstone in Minnesota, and who knows, maybe John Kennedy Jr.
That one I have some personal knowledge of. The two popular ways to get rid of people, plane crashes and car crashes, and we've seen that. This guy Michael Hastings, a journalist,
Los Angeles.
Yeah, I believe it was one of the former CIA directors said it could have been. It was Richard Clark, the former head of counterterrorism under Bush and Clinton, said that there's capabilities to speed those cars up and basically take them over because they're computerized.
Yes, and they can do things probably that we can not even possibly imagine. Wayne, I can't thank you enough for being here again. When we get together in Los Angeles in 2 weeks, the one place I'm going to take you for lunch is Musso and Frank's. It's a 100-year-old restaurant on Hollywood Boulevard. It is the birthplace. It was the watering hole of the rich and the famous great writers, Dashiell Hammett, and actors. You can see billionaires and bums in there. It's going to be my pleasure to take you there, and my pleasure again to see you at the screening. Get your reactions to the film, and again on Sunday night after that screening, you and your cohorts who are going to be speaking the next day at the the live video conference of John Kennedy's 100th birthday. I cannot wait to be there with you, and I want to thank you again for being with us here tonight. And I'm going to bring you a great T-shirt. You're going to love it, okay?
Super. Look forward to it, John. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Wayne. We will talk to you later, and we will be right back with another great journalist, my cohort, Joe Sottile, the creator of News Vandal. We'll be right back.
Great music from all the greatest performers from sunup to sundown.
How do you keep the music playing?
Then, great talk all night. The mysteries of UFOs, conspiracy theories, and the true story of Las Vegas that has never been told.
There are three ways to listen to KIYQ. Go to the TuneIn app, just search for KIYQ, or go to www.kiyq.org. Listen from any telephone, call 605-477-2857. That's 605-477-2857. Long distance charges may apply.
KIYQ 107.1.
Hi, this is John Barber of John Barber's World every other Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific right here on VBS Radio. I'm telling you about a terrific show, The New Criminal Minds, with outstanding actor Gary Sinise, called Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, a tough drama about a special unit of the FBI involved in protecting Americans who are beyond borders. It follows the regular Criminal Minds, airing every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. Don't miss it. Gary Sinise is outstanding.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great VBS Radio.
Thank you for that smile upon your face. Oh, sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific, and I'd say historic, film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knapp, Coast to Coast AM.
Welcome back to John Barber's World. This is John, and I'm being joined now by my cohort, without whom I could never do this show. And I couldn't understand any of what's going on in America if I didn't read his brilliant News Vandal. He was just on Max Kaiser's show and was a huge hit on that show. He should have exposure all the time, and I'm lucky that I have him now until he becomes the major journalistic star that he deserves to be, or radio or television personality. Joe Sottile. Joe, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here. And your observations about the business of follow the money, which Wayne brought up before in the first half hour.
No, I think Wayne is dead on. And over the course of this it's called Russiagate, as this thing has unfurled slowly over time. The hacking issue has been of very little importance to me, or very little interest. How's that? I think there, I guess there's some importance because Roger Stone seemed to tip his some knowledge that he knew it was coming. And, you know, Roger Stone is what I've written about Roger Stone. I know a lot about Roger Stone. Roger Stone is one of these sort of scummy GOP operative guys. And, you know, he's also a self-aggrandizer.
Oh, is he ever?
Right. So as a self-aggrandizer, sometimes you wonder if people are making things up, which I think is one of the problems we have with President Trump, is that he's a self-aggrandizer. So he can threaten Comey with having a taping system, but it may just be a threat. It may just be something that he has done in his business practices throughout his life. It's a little bit different when you do it with the FBI because you're picking a fight with the FBI. And I'm not here to praise the FBI because we could go for a long – we can create a long list of things that the FBI has done wrong over the course of its entire existence.
There were more FBI agents who were members of the Communist Party in the United States than there were actual communists.
Well, this is one of the things with the terror plots since 9/11. Most of the terror plots that they've foiled have been terror plots that they've gone online and generated and sort of goaded, you know, people, often people who are loners and ne'er-do-wells, they
yeah,
goad them into these plots.
Joe, I hate to interrupt, but look at this. If they didn't have people to arrest, they wouldn't have a job.
That's, well, of course. I mean, look, if I was of a mind, I would go into the, you know, window business, and I would just hire people to go around with baseball bats every Sunday night and break windows. And I'd never, I'd always be living high on the hog. So that, which, by the way, is one way to describe the way the Central Intelligence Agency has operated in the United States. They're basically a bunch of guys who go around and break windows so that the United States can come in and replace them. But
that's exactly right. Or windows you can't see through when you're
windows you get
through.
Two-way glass. So or one-way glass. So with Trump, it has occurred to me, particularly, I happen to have a couple really good sources. I know a journalist who has good sources, and I know somebody directly who is a very, very good source. And I've been told, beginning in July, I was told to keep my eye on something called Trump Soho. Trump Soho is a project that was funded by Bayrock Capital. Bayrock has a guy named Felix Sater in there. Felix Sater is a known money launderer for Russian organized crime. There is a guy from Azerbaijan. There are Kazakhstan individuals involved in Bayrock, and Trump is involved in Bayrock. And Bayrock has been one of these nexus points. Now, I've been told that there are many levels of fraud at Bayrock, including the fact that Ivanka Trump was brought in to lie about how sold Bayrock's condos were to drive up the price, and the condos that were sold were actually sold to organized crime figures in the Russian mafia. So then this last week we had a guy from Golf Magazine talk about how Eric Trump was touting the fact that their golf course in North Carolina was funded with Russian organized crime money. Donald Trump Jr. has talked about how their business was living off of Russian money. And, you know, one of the problems with Donald Trump is that he's filed for bankruptcy, a handful of times. And by the time you get to the 21st century, there is not a bank in the United States that's willing to lend to him. So the only place he can go to get money is to go on the more illicit market for money, which leads through to Russian organized crime, because one of the great ways to launder money is to go to another country and buy property. And just last week, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, CBC News, had an amazing report on a tax fraud that was going on in Russia, and how that $250 million was being cycled into Canada and the United States from this tax fraud. And that tax fraud was Russian hackers going out and getting other people's data, creating false identities out of data that they hacked from other people, having tax refunds come illicitly from the Russian government to these fake accounts. And then that money was then turned into properties in the United States and Canada. Well, last week, the Justice Department abruptly settled a lawsuit that was related to this tax fraud and gave no reason. And the people, the Russian figures who were in this lawsuit were were they settled without any admission of guilt of anything, and also this settlement meant that they could never be in jeopardy of being prosecuted for any of this fraud ever again. I thought, well, that's kind of interesting that the Justice Department just out of hand would do that. Why would they do that? What I mean, you know, what's the point of that? Well, the person who was investigating that before he was fired was Preet Bharara. And Preet just wrote a story in the Post today, an op-ed in the Post today, asking when will public officials stand up to him? Well, Preet Bharara and James Comey and Sally Yates are all people who were going after Donald Trump for various reasons, or at least going after aspects of Donald Trump's campaign and people who worked for him. All three have been fired, and all three were on trails that followed money, had really very little to do with hacking, but had to do with Michael Flynn, for example, who had gotten money from Russia. But oh, by the way, Michael Flynn got caught red-handed, was outed by James Woolsey, former CIA director and kind of half cuckoo bird anti-Islamic guy, who was momentarily a national security advisor for the Trump campaign, went to the Wall Street Journal and said, oh yeah, I sat in a meeting where Michael Flynn was talking to two goons for Erdogan of Turkey to get this guy Gulen, who has been staying here in exile in Pennsylvania, to kidnap him in the middle of the night, unbeknownst to American officials, and spirit him out of the country to, I guess, be executed because Erdogan blames him for the coup, says he planned the coup from Pennsylvania. I still think Erdogan planned his own coup to cut off opposition and become basically a dictator of Turkey. Well, I think that I think that Michael Flynn is in deep, deep trouble on that one issue, and there's a lot of money involved in that because Erdogan has a paymaster here in Washington, D.C., who is known to have paid out somewhere between $300,000 and $800,000 to somebody who may be Michael Flynn. So there is this huge – this is one aspect of what I think is a very, very large scandal that has almost nothing to do with hacking and has everything to do – with money laundering and corruption and organized crime. And John, as you know as well as anybody on the planet, if Donald Trump was building big buildings in the tri-state area in Manhattan in the 80s and went on to casinos in Atlantic City, what do you think the odds are that he's ever had any connection with organized crime? Oh, and by the way, particularly since his first mentor in the late 70s was a guy named Roy Cohn.
Wow. Holy smokes. Why on earth, then, do you think that Donald Trump ran for the presidency?
Well, I just have – this is a suspicion. And I'm – you know, John, I like to be a journalist. I don't like to go with suspicions. But I am beginning to feel – sense that the entire Trump candidacy and presidency was designed to take control of the executive branch to stop – forestall or at least obfuscate investigations into probably one of the world's largest networks of money laundering and real estate fraud.
Wow. You know, if that's the case, you'd have to say he's almost brilliant because he succeeded in taking over that office.
Well, or the people behind him are brilliant. And this is one of the things, you know, the guy that nobody talks about is a guy named Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is the lawyer behind Donald Trump. And Michael Cohen is a Roy Cohn kind of guy. And right. I think that Donald Trump is the ultimate shiny object. And if you have Donald Trump in front...
What a great phrase.
Right? Great. If he's out front, everybody's looking at him. Meanwhile, you can do whatever you want. And by the time everybody wakes up, they think you're David Copperfield. You all of a sudden there's an airliner in the middle of the Taj Mahal, whatever. So he has failed so many times. I think he's great at tax fraud. I think he's great at tax loopholes. But ultimately, I think most of what he's done is just talked himself up and created a distraction behind which a lot of people can piggyback. And if there is anybody that has anything on him, I don't know if it's a P tape and all this other stuff and the hacking and blah, blah, blah. You know, this stuff, Vladimir Putin wants to destabilize American democracy. Well, what if really what it is that last year the Panama Papers came out, and this was the International Consortium for Investigative Journalism. And those Panama Papers exposed a massive segment of the money laundering that comes out of Russia's kleptocracy. And I believe that my feeling is, and again, I'm going with feelings, this is not reporting, but my feeling is that leak was partially generated, if not wholly generated, by somebody inside the intelligence community as a warning to Vladimir Putin.
Well, because, to rewind a bit, to say that the Russians are interested in destroying America's democracy is impossible, because you can't destroy what's already destroyed. We are self-destructing, and it began, as you know, on November 22nd, 1963.
Yep.
What Donald Trump seems to sound like to me, if it's heads and tails and Bernie Madoff is tails, Donald Trump is heads.
Yes. You know,
it's like he's almost the legal Bernie Madoff.
Yes. I think that is a wonderful – I'm going to steal that now, John, because I think that is a wonderful description of who he is. He really is a Ponzi
– He's the wasp Bernie Madoff.
He's the wasp. That's right.
He is the Goyish of Bernie Madoff.
And I think that in many ways what you see with Donald Trump's entire career is somebody who was kind of a nouveau riche trying to get into Manhattan, coming in from Queens. The family changed the name from Drumpf to Trump. He's really somebody who's such a social climber. He's a social climber almost like an autistic person would be a social climber, to the extent to which he cannot even see the effect that his social climbing is having on the society around him. So he's never self-aware enough to know that he looks like a turd in a punch bowl. But that – there's almost a purity to his dishonesty, if you follow me. He's so completely convinced of his own supremacy.
I must tell you, the more I look at Alec Baldwin doing Donald Trump, the more realistic Alec Baldwin seems.
I got to tell you, it really is becoming one of the most brilliant impersonations I've ever seen in my life.
It is. And he's making the real Donald Trump look like a puppet or an idiot. You know, I mean, I would vote for Alec Baldwin right now.
Exactly. So, but there is a nefarious thing underneath this. And John, for this thesis that I have, this idea that this really is about forestalling investigations, you, more than any person on the planet, knows that if you are going to commit major crime, the best way to ensure that you're going to get away with it is to wrest control of the investigation of said crime.
That's it. That is absolutely it. And that's what they did with the murder of John Kennedy.
And that's what they did with Iran-Contra. That's what they did with...
Exactly.
I can tell you this right now. I wrote about this. I think that I've written about the Willie Horton ad, the famous Willie Horton ad. Michael Dukakis was up 17 points.
Yes, he was.
Coming out of the Democratic convention. And Michael Dukakis, I wrote a very extensive piece on Willie Horton and Michael Dukakis and George Bush and how Donald Trump and his campaign used some of that racial messaging in his campaign. And if you go back and look and you start hearing what Michael Dukakis was saying, he was motivated by Iran-Contra, and he wanted to clean house and restore integrity to the U.S. government in light of what he was seeing with Iran-Contra. That could not happen. There was no way that George Herbert Walker Bush and Caspar Weinberger and Ed Meese and all of those guys who were involved, Poindexter and Secord and McFarlane, there is no way that they could let that happen. And oh, by the way, when the fact that they were able to win that election, in no small part because of their very, very vicious racial messaging campaign, that also allowed them to manage one of the great unknown scandals in the history of the United States, which is the BCCI scandal, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which has a lot to do with the funding and founding of Al-Qaeda the funding of Osama bin Laden and what became the Taliban coming out of Pakistani sources, a huge money laundering and campaign and slush funding going out of BCCI, a guy named Albert Hakim. Anybody who remembers, when you hear that name, you go, yeah, I remember Albert Hakim. Google Albert Hakim, H-A-K-I-M. You will see that during that Bush administration, they were able to manage what could have been a follow-on scandal to Iran-Contra that would completely gutted out many of the people who traced their roots back to the Kennedy assassination.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Well, again, I don't want you to be talking about feelings since you're a journalist and you like to stick to facts, but I think what you said just earlier about your feelings about Trump, I think are absolutely right on target. So now as you look at this, and you know more about this than anyone that I know, what we feel as ordinary Americans, the 99% of us, is we just feel the weight and the results of all this corruption. Yeah. We can't quite figure it out, but we know that something is rotten in Denmark.
Yeah.
How do you continue to do what you do? How do you keep up the spirit to continue what you do? And what do your feelings tell you about what is inevitably going to happen in this country if this corruption persists?
Well, I do what I do because I can't imagine doing anything else, because I've been, you know, my first memory is watching Watergate hearings. I remember seeing the helicopter leaving that footage. Remember, it was film. It wasn't video. It was film, yeah, of the helicopter leaving the evacuation of Saigon. I grew up in Iran-Contra. These things, this is just kind of the America that I know and that I've been part of. And I guess on some level, I would love for some of the people who invested that last little shard of hope they had that the American dream could actually be something and just said, I'm just going to take a chance with Donald Trump. If I could get them to detox their Trumpism and open their eyes and see, that would actually be worth it to me, because I feel a little bit of sympathy for a lot of people who supported Trump on the idea that he could make America great again, even though the reason I went on Max Kaiser's show is I wrote a piece about the robot economy, Ready or Not, Here It Comes. That America of the 50s and the 60s, the manufacturing, the one wage can support a family, it's never coming back.
Never.
It's never coming back. And the sooner that we start facing reality, whether it's the reality of what happened to John F. Kennedy, whether it's the reality of what happened in Iran-Contra, whether it's the reality of what's going on with the economy, whether it's the reality that the financial system is a giant Ponzi scheme and they've turned America into debt slaves. That's why your wages are down and your credit is up, because you will never be able to get on top and you will always be on the treadmill for them. If I could just get people to just open their eyes a little bit, maybe we can start demanding that people give us a vision of the future as opposed to trying to resurrect or settle grudges from the past. Many of these are mythical grudges that are created by the two-party system to keep themselves in power, because there is no other thing that the Republicans or Democrats need than each other. That's the ultimate thing that keeps them in power, is the back and forth between the two of them. And, you know, this election, Hillary Clinton, the distaste for Hillary Clinton was also a thing that contributed to Donald Trump, and we got into a lesser of two evils thing. But we're at a point at which there is a civilizational change happening, and until we start planning for it, the longer we take to plan for it, the more the pain's going to be when it finally hits home.
Well, I had that's brilliantly said, because you cannot drive a car and go forward looking in a rearview mirror. We must be looking forward. The last president who tried to take on the CIA was President Carter.
Yep.
He said that America will never be right again unless we find out what happened to John F. Kennedy in Dallas. And to do that, he nominated Ted Sorensen, yep, a Kennedy man, to be head of the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, the establishment came down on him and Sorensen so hard, because Sorensen was one of those people who quoted what John Kennedy said, we're going to break them into 1,000 pieces and throw them to the wind. And instead, they chose a military man, Stansfield.
A Navy guy.
Okay, so there you go. But in any event, I just want to tell you how proud I am of what you're doing. When I interviewed Buckminster Fuller in 1970, he said to me, John, 50 years from now, the luckiest people in America are going to be the 20% who have a job.
Yeah.
I mean, yep. And I thought, what are you talking about? But there you go. Anyway, I just want to tell you, I'm monumentally proud of you. I'm thrilled that you're on the show. I learned so much from you, and I'm really looking forward to you finally getting into Los Angeles on Friday, May 26th, at the Music Hall Theater to the premiere day. We have 4 screenings a day. I'm going to do a Q&A at the evening screening Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and I will see you there on Friday. And I must tell you, I'm just so delighted you're part of the show. I'm so thrilled to be fun. I've never met you. I just see this great picture sitting behind
you. Well, John, it's as ever, it's always been my honor and privilege. And as people know, you're somebody who actually affected me when I was a youngster watching Unreal People, and you've impacted me greatly later on in life. And it's just been an honor. And thank you very much.
I'm going to tell you what I mentioned to Wayne before we went on the show. There is a fan of mine and yours, and Wayne, I've met once very, very briefly. I'm sorry, we're out of time. I'll have to tell the folks this story next time. Thank you all so very much. You have a terrific night. And my thanks to Doug and Don Newsom, who run this great network, and to Mike Kim, my producer, Joe Satilli, my scientist, Kick, and to all of you, good night and good luck.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 sunny. I love you.